Americans hold a second day of protests over the integrity of the presidential election as ballot counting drags on in several states that will decide the outcome. Meanwhile, Democratic candidate Joe Biden says he has no doubt that he will win the election, as President Trump claims he has been cheated out of winning the votes. Also coming up, Iran's foreign minister says the era of Western hegemony has ended and the US can no longer show other countries how to protect citizens' rights. News. We're live from our headquarters in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story: supporters of President Donald Trump and his Democratic challenger Joe Biden have held a second day of protests in Philadelphia and other U.S. cities over the election vote count. Both groups appeared outside a vote counting center in Philadelphia on Thursday morning. A group of the president's supporters held Trump, Pence flags and signs saying "Vote stops on election day." Across the street, Biden supporters chanted "Count every vote." Later in the day, anti-Trump protests were also held in New York's Manhattan area. On Wednesday, a few demonstrations led to clashes with police, with some protesters arrested. The demonstrations were triggered in part by Trump's comments following election day. He demanded that vote counting stop and made claims about voter fraud. And U.S. President Donald Trump has once again hurled accusations at Democrats, claiming they are engineering the presidential election.
And there are many instances which will be reported very shortly. There's tremendous litigation going on, and this is a case where they're trying to steal an election. They're trying to rig an election, and we can't let that happen. Detroit and Philadelphia, known as two of the most corrupt political places anywhere in our country.
Trump added that if, quote, legal votes are counted, he will easily win the presidential race. He once again lashed out at the mail-in voting system, calling it a one-sided method that benefits Democrats. Trump's campaign filed lawsuits to halt vote counting in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, while claiming vote irregularities in Georgia. State judges in Georgia and Michigan, however, have rejected the suits, citing a lack of evidence. In the meantime, Democratic candidate Joe Biden expressed confidence that he will be elected as the next U.S. president after the vote counting process ends.
We have no doubt that when the count is finished, Senator Harris and I will be declared the winners. So I ask everyone to stay calm, all the people to stay calm. The process is working. The count is being completed, and we'll know very soon.
The Democratic candidate stressed that each ballot must be counted. The race is tight in Georgia, Nevada, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania. Biden needs only six more electoral votes to secure the 270 required to win the nail-biter race. Trump has so far won 214. Final results can take days to be announced, as counting mail-in ballots is said to be a time-taking process. So the United States presidential election has not produced a victor, but at least the vote was held under peaceful conditions. The lack of a clear winner, however, appears certain to exhaust the average citizen, as 2020 continues to be a year of major chaos and instability.
As expected, the bitterly contested U.S. presidential election seems certain to be decided by the courts and not voters. Incumbent Donald Trump has asked the Supreme Court to intervene in the state of Pennsylvania, and hundreds of election-related lawsuits have already been filed. Protesters gathered in Chicago to demand that all votes get counted.
He said outright that he would attempt to steal the election, attempt to manipulate ballots, and claim victory, and he did that. The problem is that he's been rejected and he's losing, and I think that it shows that people need an alternative. And I think we actually need to start pointing towards a new party, because Biden's victory was, despite Trump being such a bad president, such a weak leader, Biden only squeaked by, and I think that shows the need for, we need a left alternative outside of the two corporate parties.
At the end of election night, Trump appeared to be leading, but now the challenger, Joe Biden, seems to have the edge.
Is that neither of these parties are appealing to the material sensibilities of working class people. And although we've seen the young come out in mass to kind of support Biden, I think the overt racism, that was the reason why they came out.
What is certain is that the mainstream media's widely touted blue wave of Democratic victories did not happen. Democrats actually lost seats in the House of Representatives, and it appears they will not win control of the Senate. The U.S. has a deeply decentralized system, which makes state governments especially important. Despite a massive campaign, Democrats did not flip hardly any state legislatures or governorships in what was called a massive win for local Republicans. Republicans now control 60% of state legislatures, half of all governorships, and conservatives dominate the Supreme Court. So it appears that even if Trump does not win re-election, his controversial tenure did not hurt the Republican Party and give a path back to power for Democrats. A Biden victory would seemingly provide some balance, but balance is not the main problem, but the widely agreed upon idea that the two parties seem to be more polarized than ever. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has criticized the West's hegemony, saying things are moving in a different direction.
I'm not predicting the end of the United States or the West, no. I'm saying the era of hegemony of the West has ended. The ideological hegemony has ended. The West can no longer pretend to teach the rest of the world how to preserve the rights of its citizens. And things are changing. Things are moving in different direction. That's why they resort to desperate measures.
Zarif said the U.S. is now resorting to desperate measures by applying sanctions illegally. He added that Washington, in fact, is punishing anyone who tries to observe Security Council Resolution 2231. Zarif stressed that the world would be a much better place if the United States changes its policy and approach. The Iranian foreign minister made the remarks in Caracas, where he praised Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro for resisting what he described as a U.S.-coordinated campaign to oust him. Elsewhere, the United Nations has slammed Israel for carrying out the largest demolition of Palestinian homes in years in the occupied West Bank. The UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said in a statement that so far in 2020, nearly 690 structures have been destroyed across the West Bank. On Tuesday, Israeli bulldozers razed an entire village in the Jordan Valley, leaving some 80 Palestinians homeless. According to the UN statement, this was the biggest demolition carried out by Israeli authorities since 2016. The UN called the move a grave breach of international law. Earlier, the EU called on Israel to cease demolishing Palestinians' homes in the West Bank. Mona Kandil says that the Israeli regime does not respect international law and will continue to destroy Palestinian homes despite the EU chief's call to stop the demolitions.
EU foreign policy chief, and he's urging the Israeli regime not to destroy more Palestinian homes. However, the Israeli authorities, of course, they don't respect any calls. They don't respect the international law. And of course, they will continue destroying Palestinian homes, claiming that those homes and structures were built in the first place without getting Israeli-issued permits. This area where the homes were destroyed is very close to a number of Israeli settlements there, and the Israelis want to use the land for erecting roads to serve the Israeli settlers and not the Palestinians. This is why the EU foreign policy chief considered it illegal, and there are a number of homes as well as the schools on the list of the Israeli regime to be destroyed in the coming days.
17 states across the U.S. have reported record daily increases of COVID-19 infections as the country registers over 100,000 new cases. The number of hospitalized patients continued to rise for the 11th day in a row, reaching over 52,500. Furthermore, the country's average daily fatalities also rose to 850. Some cities and states have taken measures to curb the virus surge by imposing curfews or reducing gathering sizes. However, 17 out of 50 American states do not have mandatory mask rules. The pandemic has spread across the country but has affected the Midwest worse. Illinois and Texas are the leading states in number of cases in the last 7 days. And the coronavirus pandemic is surging across Europe, with a number of countries reporting new highs in the number of infections and mortalities. Italy registered a record number of over 34,500 new cases, taking the total number of infections to nearly 825,000. It also reported nearly 450 new deaths, the highest since May. In France, the daily infections rose by a record number of more than 58,000 cases. The country has so far reported more than 1.6 million cases. Greece also reported the highest number of infections on Thursday, recording nearly 3,000 cases. In Sweden, authorities registered more than 4,000 new coronavirus cases, the highest since the start of the outbreak. And the World Health Organization says an explosion of COVID-19 cases is seen in Europe, while mortality rates are also rising in the continent.
We do see an explosion, you know, in that sense. It takes only a couple of days to have in our European region an increase, for example, with 1 million cases. And we see little by little the mortality increasing as well.
The WHO's regional director for Europe warned that in only a couple of days there will be an increase of 1 million cases in the continent. Hans Kluge also noted that the mortality rate is also rising, but at a slower pace. European governments have implemented strict lockdown measures to stem the second wave of the pandemic. On Thursday, the continent emerged as accounting for the largest number of infections in the world. Meanwhile, the European Union has warned that the bloc's economy will not return to the pre-coronavirus levels before 2023.
The depth of the recession in 2020 and the speed of the recovery in 2021 and 2022 are expected to vary widely across member states. Nearly half of our member states are not expected to recover their pre-pandemic level of GDP by the end of 2022.
In a news conference in Brussels, the EU's Economic Affairs Commissioner said the recovery of Europe's economy has been interrupted by the second wave of the pandemic. Paolo Gentiloni said the Eurozone economy will grow much slower next year than what was predicted in July. The outbreak of the novel coronavirus has dealt a major blow to the global economies. As a result, unemployment rates have soared in many countries. We're staying in Europe, where Austrian authorities have admitted official errors leading up to the Monday terror attack. MPs are asking the government why it failed to act after receiving information in July that the gunman had traveled to Slovakia in search of ammunition. Hermeleski reports.
Vienna pays tribute to the victims of Monday's terror attack carried out by a sympathizer of the Daesh terrorist group.
It's a really tense situation, something we never had before in Vienna. So Vienna was always a really secure place, and we felt really safe and protected, and suddenly, well, out of nowhere, this comes. I'm living nearby, and hearing this was really shocking.
As the nation tries to come to grips with the terrifying shooting, news has emerged of serious mishaps in the run-up to the crime. Austria's interior minister confirmed the country did have intelligence that the gunman had travelled to Slovakia in search of ammunition in July. Apparently, a crucial tip was not followed up. Karl Niehammer admitted to official errors.
Something obviously went wrong in our communications. An independent commission of inquiry has been set up.
In Parliament, his predecessor from the right-wing FPÖ party called for the minister's resignation. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz has called for more decisive action at the EU level against what he termed political Islam. Earlier, he'd made it clear the attack should not be seen as a conflict between Christians and Muslims. Experts believe if the correct attributions are not made, it could trigger cultural wars in society.
If you define terrorism, it's the use of force against civilians in order to create fear for political purposes. So that's terrorism. That doesn't have, this definition doesn't have much to do with religion. So it's not necessary to call it Islamic or Islamist terror.
The 20-year-old gunman, an Austrian with North Macedonian roots, had been released from prison in December. Apparently, he misled the government's so-called de-radicalization program. The main worry now is how Europe is going to deal with what experts describe as the growing threat of homegrown terrorism. Homa Lesky, Vienna.
The chairman of Myanmar's military alliance, the Union Solidarity and Development Party, calls the country's persecuted Muslim minority useless.
The Rohingya left happily as if they were going on a picnic, so it's really difficult for me to accept that they were running away from the military. I cannot accept useless people in our country.
The former military commander said his country will not give in to international pressure to admit to genocide against the Rohingya Muslims. Myanmar is undergoing international criticism for the army crackdown on the Rohingya. The Buddhist government has, however, denied the accusation of genocide. In 2017, Myanmar's army carried out a brutal crackdown against the Rohingya in Rakhine State, forcing hundreds of thousands of people to flee to neighboring Bangladesh. Iranians have gathered outside Afghanistan's embassy in Iran in solidarity with the Afghan nation over the recent terrorist raid that killed at least 20 students in Kabul. Yusuf Jalali reports.
This candlelit vigil is held outside the Afghan embassy in Iran in memory of the Afghan students who lost their lives in Monday's terrorist attack on Kabul University.
My heart goes out to the families of the victims of Monday's terrorist attack that killed our brothers and sisters in Afghanistan. So we came here to condemn the inhumane attack and to send the message of peace and solidarity to the Afghan nation.
20 Afghan students were killed and over 40 others were wounded on Monday after three Daesh terrorists stormed Kabul University. One of the attackers was wearing an explosive vest and blew himself up in the campus. The two others then opened fire at students indiscriminately.
We hold the U.S. accountable for all of the troubles in Afghanistan. What have the U.S. troops done for the Afghan people except for bloodshed and destruction?
The government of Ashraf Ghani is also responsible for the tragedy. It is incapable of countering the terrorists. Innocent people are the major victim of the government's incompetence in fighting terrorism.
In a gesture of solidarity, Tehran also held this video mapping on its iconic Azadi Tower. The video projection depicted messages of sympathy with the Afghan nation.
While Daesh terrorists have claimed responsibility for the Kabul attack, students here blame the incident on, quote, the unjustified presence of U.S. troops in Afghanistan. They say American forces have been on the ground in Afghanistan under the pretext of fighting terrorism. But in fact, they've been fueling the flames of terrorism. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
The United States is an outlier among Western nations in the dominance of its two-party system, something barely plausible in many democracies. Unbeknownst to many, however, there are a number of other candidates on the presidential ballot offering a distinct, different future for America than the established duopoly. The two-party system is clearly failing Americans, with both candidates for the United States' top job largely disliked by the American public. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Alan McLeod, a writer, and published under the heading, Here Are a Few Third-Party Candidates in U.S. and How They've Been Censored. Please stay with us for more of Alan McLeod's article. The Green Party is hoping to build on winning 1.5 million votes in 2016. Their presidential ticket consists of Howie Hawkins and Angela Walker as his running mate. A self-described democratic socialist, Howie Hawkins worked in clean energy and has been organizing against war and environmental destruction for almost 50 years. On foreign policy, Howie Hawkins is running on the promise to cut the military budget by 75% and use the savings to fund a worldwide shift to renewable energy, unilateral disarmament, and to never use nuclear weapons aggressively. The Greens also call for democratization of the media system, including antitrust regulations to break up powerful monopolies. Funded in 1971, the Libertarian Party achieved by far their greatest vote total in the 2016 presidential election, where former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson received 4.5 million votes nationwide. This year, Joe Jorgensen, a former IBM representative and a software business owner, is hoping to go further. Joe Jorgensen's platform opposes COVID-19 lockdowns and calls for cuts to public spending and allowing businesses, big and small, to operate with even more freedom. As president, I will work tirelessly to slash federal spending, make government much, much smaller, and eliminate the federal income tax, so you can keep what you earn, she promises on her campaign website. She also proposes a huge shift towards nuclear power, whilst opposing Medicare for All, preferring free market solutions to the healthcare crisis. Government anti-poverty programs don't work, she says. A lifelong activist based in San Francisco, California, Gloria LaRiva is the Party for Socialism and Liberation's presidential candidate in 2020. Gloria LaRiva is calling for a complete rethink of how society is structured. For the earth to live, capitalism must be placed with a socialist system, she claims, noting that incessant growth and overproduction is threatening the future of Earth. Gloria LaRiva is also advocating closing all foreign U.S. military bases around the world, taking over giant Wall Street banks, and jailing those responsible for the financial crisis. There are also a number of other candidates on the ballot in many states, including Rocky De La Fuente of the Alliance Party, Don Blackenship of the Constitution Party, Brian Carroll of the American Solidarity Party, Jade Simmons from Becoming One Nation, and independent candidate Brock Pierce. Rapper Kanye West's name will also appear on ballots in 12 states. However, simply appearing on the ballot has proven to be an extremely difficult hurdle for many, with only Joe Jorgensen's Libertarian Party even able to qualify in all 50 states. Much of the attack on third parties is being led by Democrats, who wish to keep them off the ballot to stop any spoiler effect they could have. Earlier this year, Green Party Vice President Walker was alleged to have filled out a change of address form slightly incorrectly for her South Carolina residence. As a result, Democrats used this to lead a campaign to remove her name from the ballot paper in the battleground state of Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Three political parties have also been undermined by a lack of media publicity, their actions barely reported on by the American media. As such, they have been forced to rely on social media for outreach. However, that has not been plain sailing. Harry Hawkins was even temporarily kicked off Twitter for alleged impersonation. "How do I impersonate myself? Twitter's explanation for its censorship makes no sense," he responded. Proponents of the third parties argue that it keeps the two major political parties in check and scared that voters could desert them. Historically, the arrival of powerful third parties has shaken up the political system and led to progressive change. However, the bigger threat to election integrity this year is surely voter suppression shenanigans. Earlier this year, Donald Trump let slip that he believed no Republican would ever be elected if turnout was high. Since then, Trump appears to have been on a campaign to decrease participation in the election. Hundreds of mail sorting machines have been removed from post offices and sorting houses. Since 2013, almost 1,700 polling stations across the South have also been closed down, primarily in poorer and darker neighborhoods.
Spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. If we all open our eyes to see, he is all that we need right now. And we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. One of the most important topics in Islamic ethics is the topic of yaqeen or certainty. The difference between us and the infallible Imams and generally infallibles is while we believe in something and we are not certain about it. They believe in something and they are certain. For example, about committing sins. While we know that when we commit sin, inevitably we go to hell, at the same time we commit sin, they believe in the same fact, but they know that committing sin is equal to going to the hell. And they see this fact as we see something by our eyes. So while we are not sure about something that we know, they are sure about the result of everything. As a result, they never commit sin as infallibles, but there is probability and possibility of committing sin by us. In a clearer example, you do not touch fire because you are certain that you're going to hurt yourself. Because of your certainty, you never touch it. Committing sin in the eyes of our infallibles is exactly the same as this example. In the Holy Quran, God says, وَعَبُدْ رَبَّكَ حَتَّى يَأْتِيَكَ الْيَقِينَ. Worship your Lord till certainty comes to you. So, as a believer, I am in doubt about many facts. There are many realities in the whole world. At the same time, I, as a human being, am sure, I'm not sure about it. I'm in doubt about it. But the solution to this problem is worship your Lord, obey your God till your doubt would be replaced by conviction. This is the solution.
Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow. His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. Down this road that holds all the answers. Open your heart to something greater. His holy book speaks pure and true, and always tells us what we must do. His last prophet was sent as a guide, an example by which we abide. There is salvation for those who seek to find the one and only source of peace and understanding of why we are here, who created us, who we must fear. So what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
There is in a tradition, in a narration from
Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, خَيْرُ مَا أُلْقِيَ فِي الْقَلْبِ الْيَقِينِ. The best of what has been placed in the heart is certainty, is conviction. In another narration, which is narrated from Imam Ali, peace be upon him, نَوْمٌ عَلَى يَقِينٍ خَيْرٌ مِّن صَلَاةٍ فِي شَكٍ. Sleeping while you are at the level of certainty is better than praying while you are in doubt. This is the difference between the person who has reached the level of certainty and the others. Before I mention some of the fruits and results of being at this level, I just want to mention one interesting narration from the Prophet of God about six signs of conviction. According to this narration, there are six signs of certainty. أما علامة الموقن فستة. The signs of the person who has reached the level of certainty are six. أيقن بالله حقا فآمن به. Primarily, the first sign is that he has reached the level of certainty regarding God Himself. As a result, he believes in God, a real belief, not apparent faith in God. The second sign, وَأَيْقَنَ بِأَنَّ الْمَوْتَى حَقُّ فَحَذِرَهُ. And the second sign of such a person is he is certain about the fact of death. And as a result, he is aware of this fact. Once again, we know that one day we will die, and in some place we will die, but still we are not sure about this reality. And the reason we are not sure about this reality is we are attached to this world. The second sign is to be sure about death. The third one, وَأَيْقَنَ بِأَنَّ الْبَعْثَ حَقٌ فَخَافَ الْفَضِيحَ. Such a person is sure, is certain about the day of judgment, about resurrection. And as a result, he fears shame, shame of that day. It is interesting. We have many horrible or terrifying verses of the Holy Quran regarding the day of resurrection. God doesn't want to frighten us. Rather, God wants to give us the real of this image that we will encounter. That day, we will run away from our relatives, our brother, our parents, our family. The fourth sign of the person of certainty, وَأَيْقَنَ بِأَنَّ الْجَنَّةَ حَقٌّ فَاشْتَاقَ إِلَيْهَا. The fourth thing that such a person is convicted about it is the heaven, the paradise. As a result, he longs for it. He's willing to gain it as soon as possible. The fifth one, وَأَيْقَنَ بِأَنَّ النَّارَ حَقٌّ فَظَهَرَ سَعْيَهُ لِلنَّجَاةِ مِنْهَا. The fifth sign of such a person is he's sure about the hell, the blaze of fire after the day of resurrection. As a result, he does his best, he attempts, he tries in order to be saved from it. لِلنَّجَاهِ مِنْهَا. And the last one, the last sign of such a person, وَأَيْقَنَ بِأَنَّ الْحِسَابَ حَقٌّ فَحَاسَبَ نَفْسَهُ. He's convicted that the account is true, and as a result, he takes account of himself. فَحَاسَبَ نَفْسَهُ. Takes account of himself. Thank you very much for your time and attention. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Rahimallahu man fara'al fatiha ma salawat.
Allahumma salli ala sayyidina wa maulana Muhammadin wa ala alihi.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the book, The Room Where It Happened, former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton reiterates President Donald Trump's quote three times, that for United States, the EU is worse than China, only smaller. The building of the modern global trade system was a project led by the United States and Europe over several decades following the Second World War. Donald Trump's America First trade policy has been especially self-destructive. He sees every trade issue as a zero-sum battle that the United States must win at all costs.
precluding any cooperation that serves both sides' interests. But it should be just as clear that a victory by Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden in November would not heal all wounds in the US-European Union relationship. The fact is that in the countries on both sides of the Atlantic, proponents of free trade as the solution to all political impasses do not consider that communism and socialism are not the most important rivals and enemies of the free market. Rather, it is the free economies of other hegemons and countries. We now present you an article written by Farshid Faranakian, an Iranian attorney at law who holds a PhD in oil and gas law. The piece is titled, "For US, EU is Worse Than China, Only Smaller in Transatlantic Trade Disputes." Please stay with us for more of Farshid Faranakian's article. Iran is mentioned 755 times in the book The Room Where It Happened, which contains 18-month recollections of John Bolton as US President Donald Trump's National Security Advisor. In fact, among other countries, the name of Iran is mentioned the most in this book. Also, the name or title of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and President of Iran, Hassan Rouhani, and Iran's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mohammad Javad Zarif, has been mentioned 28, 26, and 43 times respectively. This volume of attention to Iran and its high-ranking officials indicates that the White House can never ignore Iran's position as its vital role in regional and international developments, and is forced to pay attention to this issue. Of course, the 167 repetitions of the name Europe in John Bolton's book, many of which have been used to express the European Union's serious disagreement with Donald Trump on various issues, highlight the importance of the outcome of the recent United States presidential election for its members. Donald Trump does not look at the EU as an ally or even a partner, but as a rival. The difference that is taken into consideration in the following of this article is a difference in perception of the concept of free trade between this union and Donald Trump. This difference of opinion is such that it has brought the countries on both sides of the Atlantic to a serious trade war. By the mid-1990s, the United States found itself in a position of primacy, unmatched in modern history. Its combination of economic, military, and soft power dwarfed all others, and scholars such as William Wilberforce and Stephen Brooks offered arguments for why the unipolar era might last as long or even longer than the bipolar era that preceded it. What these optimists did not anticipate was a series of self-inflicted wounds that the United States would suffer in the years that followed, a train wreck of recurring blunders that has accelerated and worsened under President Donald Trump. Before Trump, the mistakes of the unipolar era fell under three main headings. The first error was adopting a grand strategy of liberal hegemony, which sought to supposedly spread democracy, markets, and other so-called liberal values far and wide, and to bring the whole world into a liberal order that was designed and led by the United States. The second mistake was to allow public institutions to deteriorate by starving them of resources and then blaming them for all problems. The third misstep was the weaponization of partisan politics. Unfortunately, these three trends were also sharply at odds with each other. As Farid Zakaria, an Indian-American journalist, noted back in 1998, the result was a hollow hegemony, as the United States tried in vain to manage the world on the cheap. The consequences of these three errors provided the toxic brew that allowed an incompetent and narcissistic charlatan like Donald Trump to reach the White House. His only significant foreign policy achievement to date is getting Britain to decide not to use Huawei technology for its new 5th generation digital network, but that's not much to show for nearly 4 years in office. When the United States and the European Union fight over trade, it might lack the intensity and geopolitical impact of the US-China trade war. But what transatlantic trade disputes have so far lacked in terms of drama, they make up for with a history of irreconcilable differences and sheer tenacity, which does not bode well for the relationship going forward, no matter who wins the US presidential election. Take the dispute of more than 15 years over the various government subsidies enjoyed by rival aircraft makers Airbus and Boeing. Part of the aircraft dispute hinges on a fundamental question that is playing out with the rise of China. To what extent should countries be permitted to bend the rules in order for their companies to catch up with dominant market leaders? There is no legal answer to this question. It requires a negotiated settlement, however difficult those negotiations might be. In other words, 16 years of fighting have achieved nothing but new tariffs that hurt exporters of unrelated products, and that have not helped either company. That self-destructive failure has set a template for US-European Union trade relations. Instead of finding mutually acceptable resolutions to trade problems, each side has dug in deeper, often inflaming public opinion. US-European disagreements have entrenched the idea that product regulations are purely a national matter, even if they are often internationally used to block trade. The ongoing Airbus-Boeing dispute was one of several that derailed the grandly named Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, TTIP, which was supposed to be a comprehensive deal to align the two superpowers of trade at a time when the growing challenge from China was becoming apparent. But in 2016, after 3 years and 15 rounds of negotiations, the planned agreement died without a single chapter being concluded. President Donald Trump reiterated his threat to impose a hefty tariff on European cars, mainly aimed at German companies such as Volkswagen and Daimler-Benz. Donald Trump claimed that the EU was formed in order to take advantage of the United States, and he has frequently said that Europe treats us worse than China. The United States has also launched an investigation under Section 301, the same law used to impose tariffs on China, into new digital taxes levied or under consideration in the European Union and several of its member states. The European Union, in turn, has promised to retaliate in kind against any new US tariffs. European Union Trade Commissioner Phil Hogan warned that he expected an especially turbulent relationship with the United States in the months leading up to the November presidential election. The United States and Europe are threatening tariffs against each other instead of finding common ground. Corporate taxation is another battleground. With governments across the world starved for resources to fight the COVID-19 pandemic, they need to find better ways to tax global companies, such as Apple, that are increasingly effective at avoiding taxes. In the book, The Room Where It Happened, John Bolton reiterates Trump's quote three times, that for the United States, the European Union is worse than China, only smaller. The building of the modern global trade system was a project led by the United States and Europe over several decades following the Second World War. Donald Trump's America First trade policy has been especially self-destructive. He sees every trade issue as a zero-sum battle that the United States must win at all costs, precluding any cooperation that serves both sides' interests. But it should be just as clear that a victory by Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden in November would not heal all the wounds in US-European Union relationship. The fact is that in the countries on both sides of the Atlantic, proponents of free trade as the solution to all political impasses do not consider that communism and socialism are not the most important rivals and enemies of the free market. Rather, it is the free economies of other hegemons and countries. Throughout history, Western European powers have repeatedly pushed other free economies to the brink of war or economic blockade in order for their free economy to flourish. France, the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, Portugal, and Spain have competed for maximum freedom of action for themselves and minimum economic freedom for others. Those who think that the free market leads to freedom and prosperity of all countries ignore the violent aspect of competition, namely natural confrontation and conflict. They want to follow the romantic theory of abundance, which believes that there is room for everyone on earth and that there are unlimited resources in the market, and that one can always reach a win-win situation by thinking. Unfortunately, history and the natural sciences do not confirm any of these optimistic post-Second World War assumptions. Trade tensions between China, Europe, and United States are the latest example of the truth that has existed on the planet for thousands of years. Market resources and capacity are limited. The free market is good, but for me, not for my enemy. A free market leads to the freedom and prosperity of some nations and the captivity and poverty of other nations. The free market is good if you're strong, and if you're weak, the free market is bad. Same as the forest is good for the lion and bad for the sheep. You may ask, isn't the free market itself going to be strengthening us? The answer is maybe. If sheep survive in the forest, maybe. Strengthening is possible only through knowing and learning, not through blindly implementing an economic model. That is why a unipolar world order is neither natural nor stable, nor fundamentally possible. The free market is not a saving religion to unite the nations under its flag. The goal of all nations in history has been and will be their economic freedom and the captivity of others. There is no easy way out.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.